Good morning and welcome to the Tuesday edition of the KRFY Morning Show with your Tuesday morning host, Julie Calamine. That's me and my co-host, Phil Huff. Good morning, Phil.
Morning, Julie. How are you?
I'm great. It's been a great week. We're feeling fall weather starting to come to the Sandpoint area, and it's been a good week for getting out and enjoying that weather.
Oh, definitely the frost is on the pumpkin.
Seems so. Everything's gotten pretty frosty. I've been out of town for part of the week. I was fishing east of Boise on a small stretch of river, the South Fork of the Boise River. And I mentioned that because our topic today is fishing, Phil.
Well, that sounded like it was fun. Did you catch anything?
We did catch a few. We had to figure it out, and then it went well for us, my hubby and me, after that. How about you? What have you been up to?
Oh, we went to a hiker gathering near Mount Hood and had a lot of good fun.
That's good. So we've both been out enjoying this fall weather. We're going to talk about the weather, and then we're going to introduce our morning show guests today, and they do relate to fishing. Today, plan for a high of around 61 and sunny, which is great to hear about. Tonight, clear, low of 35, not quite freezing. Tomorrow, sunny, high of 64, low in the middle 30s. Looks like kind of the same weather for the rest of the week. Highs in the low 60s, lows in the middle and low 30s. So we're definitely into fall here in Sandpoint, but it's sunny and beautiful. So we need to make sure we get out and enjoy that. And speaking of enjoying that, we've got some really great morning show guests this morning to talk about one way we can still get out into the fall weather, and that is Idaho Fish and Game Guys. And we're here with Andy. Are you the regional manager for? Yes, regional manager in Coeur d'Alene. We have Andy Ducks. Good morning, Andy.
Good morning.
Good, great to have you here. And we're also joined by Conservation Officer Tom Whalen. And is that actually your title? I've got to get these titles right.
You can just add senior to that.
All right, senior. And you are the senior. You probably are the senior Conservation Idaho of Idaho person in the panhandle.
Very senior.
And finally, we have Rob Ryan, who's a regional fishery biologist and who knows everything about things biological related to fishing. Hi, Rob.
Hi, how are you doing? Everything, yes.
That's right. Good. Well, we'll be confident that you'll have the right answers for us this morning. Well, let's start by having y'all tell us just a little bit about what you do. And Andy, why don't you start and we'll just go around from right to left.
Sure. Well, as the regional fishery manager, I just oversee our fisheries program here in the Panhandle region. So we have quite a few staff that work on everything from management to research and ultimately trying to use that information to make decisions about how we manage our fisheries.
And you've been here for a little while because I think you were relatively new to that post when I started doing radio here at KRFY.
Yeah, I think I've been in the manager position now for just a little over 3 years.
All right.
But I've been in the region for, I think, 11 years
now. Okay, so you're pretty settled in.
Yeah.
You do a little education, too, because I saw you out on the river, out on Trestle Creek about a week ago, didn't I?
That's right, yeah. We had an outreach activity we did that day and trying to get folks a little more up to speed on some fisheries issues here in the Lake Poundre area.
Yeah, things that are happening with the bull trout and the kokanee salmon, et cetera. Tom, you're out there even more, though. Tom Whalen, tell us about what your work is and how long you've been doing it.
Oh, I'm coming up on 30 years of being a game warden, Julie. So I've been working primarily doing the enforcement end of things, but tied to that is all the education, such as what Andy just did. But we do a lot of field trips and just got done with that, what I call field trip season, as part of the fall kokanee run up Trestle Creek, and I've been part of a group that's trying to do some deeper, more fixed education type products that what you'll find at Trestle, some changes going on there.
That's right. And Ryan, tell us a little bit about your work, how long you've been with the department, and what sort of work you do there.
Yeah, so I'm a regional fishery biologist, and I've been with the agency about 15 years. Most of that time has been as a regional fishery biologist, but in different parts of the state and doing a few different things. About 10 years of that has been in the panhandle, and my role is mostly to be out there collecting information about where fish are, what they're doing in regional waters, and then use that information to make recommendations on how to manage those populations best for the people of Idaho and the anglers specifically in most cases. So
I think that's a great place to kind of delve into a bunch of topics. It sounds like really it's a lot of applied science.
Oh, very much so, yeah. Yep, very, very applied. We're trying to understand what fish populations do, but then apply that to making fishing better.
So you go and collect the information, and do you provide recommendations, or do you present that to a group of people that help to inform decisions?
Yeah, so I guess regionally, collect that information and then build recommendations with the team that I work with. So mm-hmm. So Andy, fisheries manager, and I and other biologists in the region work together. And then, yeah, we make those recommendations using input from the public as well to the Fish and Game Commission. So in Idaho, it's the Fish and Game Commission is the group that makes formal decisions on how our resources are managed. But.
Sure. And we've got a manager, a researcher, and a person who's out in the field. Let's ask, what is the mission of Idaho Fisheries? What's the big picture here? What are you trying to work on?
Well, I think formally, the mission of our agency is to preserve, protect, perpetuate, and manage the wildlife resources of Idaho. But less formally, I think Rob said it earlier in a pretty good way, we like to think what we do is geared at trying to make fishing better and maintaining sustainable fish populations here for folks.
That's right, and it's a great state to be fishing in, isn't it? We've got so much variety and so many fish out here, don't we?
So tell us a little bit about the territory that you cover. How much a chunk of the northern part of Idaho is in your purview?
Well, for me, it's pretty much everything that drains into Lake Pend Oreille. Specific to a program that's designed to protect and bull trout that was, I'm one of the only actually game wardens that's actually funded through the mitigation program for the Cabinet Gorge relicensing. And so because of that, it's it takes me up to Priest, the upper, you know, lower Priest Lake. It takes me into everything, again, that drains into Lake Pend Oreille and all the drainages. And occasionally it takes me further when I'm asked to go or act as a second for some enforcement type issues or even education, because I found myself even in Spokane giving talks at times.
And on a regional basis, like Rob and I, our regional program in the Panhandle covers the Kootenai drainage, the Pend Oreille Basin, and then the Spokane drainage. So that'd be the Coeur d'Alene and the St. Joe. So pretty much everything from the about halfway between Coeur d'Alene and Moscow north up to the Canadian border.
So it must take a pretty good-sized team to cover all that area. Why don't you tell us about who does work for fisheries?
Sure. Well, we do have a pretty big team here in the Panhandle. We have our regional management team. Rob and I are part of that. And then we have two other biologists that work as part of our regional team as well. But then we also have two research programs in the Panhandle. One is devoted to the Kootenai River drainage, and a lot of that work focuses on white sturgeon and burbot recovery efforts. And then we have another research program that's focused on Lake Pend Oreille. Both of those programs we have available because of mitigation dollars that we get from different entities such as Bonneville Power Administration and Avista. So roll all those people together, and I forget off the top of my head, but we've got probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 or 12 permanent fishery staff that work mm-hmm. in the region.
So tell us a little bit about the study in Lake Pend Oreille. You mentioned the Kootenai for the sturgeon. What's the study in Pend Oreille about?
Well, it's not so much just a study, but we just have a big management program there to deal with all the different aspects of that fishery. But a lot mm-hmm. of it, at least historically, has involved trying to recover the kokanee population and things that depend on kokanee for food, such as the bull trout population, trophy rainbow trout that folks certainly enjoy out there. But that's sort of gotten more diverse in recent years, too, as we've had more non-native species come into play and trying to understand how to best manage the fishery with other species like smallmouth bass and walleye and others that have now become a bigger part of the fishery. So it's a pretty diverse fishery out there, and a lot of things we have to do.
It is, and that's one of several projects that we're going to be talking about later in the show this morning. But let's talk a little bit about the funding that you were just mentioning. How big a part is the funding through, say, Avista as compared to the state funding for fisheries in Idaho? Are they covering a lot of what happens up here in the Panhandle?
Well, we get funding from different sources. in the Panhandle, we, like I mentioned, have these specific research programs that are largely funded. So like the Lake Pendere Research Program is funded primarily through Bonneville Power Administration and Avista, so two hydropower mitigation funding sources. Same with the Kootenai River Research Program. It's funded predominantly from Bonneville Power. But the rest of what we do in the region is funded primarily through either license dollars or money we get from federal excise tax. So like when you go to the store and you buy a fishing rod, there's a small percentage of that goes into, it's called Dingell Johnson funding, that can, gets a portion to the states, and that helps us implement our fisheries programs throughout the state. So we have pretty diverse funding. In other parts of the state, there are other sources of funding, but a big part of what we do statewide, at least in the management realm, is from license dollars and those federal excise tax dollars.
Interesting. So it's really important that people buy their licenses and everything related to licensure in the state of Idaho, or you all aren't able to do your work.
Yeah, it's an important part of how we conserve wildlife in Idaho is having, and that's that North American model that everything's based on, where, mm-hmm. where sportsmen kind of pay the freight to manage wildlife.
And do you know, are licenses trending upwards, downwards, flat?
I don't know if I can answer that off the top of my head right now in terms of what things have been looking like this year. I do know that we've had some notices come out here recently that we've sold out of our non-resident tags and whatnot. So I think at least on the hunting side of things, things have been going really well here this fall.
That's great. Well, we had you all in a couple of weeks ago, and we were talking about an opportunity for people to offer input on the fisheries management plan and also rules and regulations. And that time period has ended. But have you, are you at a point where you've been able to read through or have any understanding of what's come from those surveys?
Well, we're in that process right now. So that formally ended on October 7th. So we've been going through those comments. I know we got a lot of good input from folks, and we're trying to work through that right now and summarize it all and understand if we need to make any changes based on that input. But I know at least in the Panhandle, we had somewhere in the neighborhood of 500 folks provide input to us, which is really helpful. And so the next steps are we'll go through all that formally, understand if any revisions are needed, and then prepare things to take to our Fish and Game Commission in November and give that final draft of the rules and the fish management plan to them to consider for their final approval.
That's great. And so, of course, the public gets an opportunity to offer input, but you all do too, I'm assuming.
Well, yeah, it's sort of a combined effort, you know, using our understanding of, you know, what's going on out there from a biological perspective, as well as trying to understand what desires the public has and trying
to blend all that. So is this a routine plan update? And if so, how often? Or is there something specifically triggering it?
Sure. So fishing rules we have on a three-year cycle. And so this will be for the fishing rules that will be in place from 2019 through 2021. And then the fish management plan is kind of a guiding policy document that sets sort of the next 6 years. How are we going to manage fisheries throughout the state over that six-year time frame?
Mm-hmm. You know, every day in the news, of course, we hear about climate change and how it's affecting humans and animals, fish, et cetera. And does part of your work part of your research and work, does it have to do with that? Are you studying climate change and how it's impacting fisheries?
Well, I wouldn't say that we study climate change per se, but we certainly have to stay current on the science and understand how things are changing and how that influences fish. So that's certainly a component of what we do to understand, you know, what some of the needs and limitations might be for managing fish populations, especially in a part of the world where we manage for a lot of cold water species that depend on, water that we've seen some of those temperature trends increasing a little bit.
That's right. And we've talked about the mission for fisheries, but we haven't talked about long-term goals. After our song break, we're going to be talking about some individual projects that are happening. But what about long-term? Are there goals that we should all know about that fisheries are working on?
Well, I think the main thing is that's kind of how that fish management plan is designed. That's set up on that six-year time frame so that we can be thinking kind of not just on a year-to-year basis, but we can kind of set some broad direction for over multiple years. What are our kind of objectives for these different fisheries throughout the region and the state? And that's kind of the idea there, so that we have multiple years to work towards some things, because a lot of times we can't go out and make a management change that's just going to instantly happen in a year or two. Sometimes it takes a commitment over several years.
It seems like there's a lot to balance with the mission that you have to perpetuate, preserve, protect. There's obviously the biological integrity of the lake, but in a lake that's been has seen so many introduced species over the years, and some of them highly desirable by sportsmen, there's a balance, isn't there?
Absolutely, and it's a challenge because there's a lot of people with a lot of different ideas on what they'd like, and at the same time, our job is to make sure that we're able to maintain not just sustainable fisheries, but also conserve native species, and so there's a lot of parts and pieces.
Are there some guiding principles you have to take all of the public input, which must cover the spectrum of those things, and make sense of it?
Yeah, and it's a pretty complex process. I think the fundamental part is we have to look at the biological part of it, understand what does it take, what species can we manage for out there and have these sustainable populations and meet these conservation objectives. And then, factor in the social part as much as we can too.
You know, Phil, Andy and Rob have it easy because they get to look at mostly the science. I get to be the guy that's out there talking to everybody.
So true.
And I hear all the different viewpoints, when you go to check a boat or talk to a boat and, talk to the anglers, and most of which I know very well, they all have opinions and sometimes very valid points and opinions. But it's, I think our job too, and what Rob and Andy do so well is they mix the science back into that, the idea of the social aspect of our jobs.
And so I think you bring up a really good point that there's a formal process here and you've collected input, and certainly there's the professional opinions. But Tom, how do the folks that talk to you who may or may not write comments, they feel like they've relieved themselves, if you will. How do you forward that information? How is that taken into account?
Well, if somebody has a viewpoint, then I direct them to those mechanisms that we have in place for putting comments. For instance, I know Julie's aware of this because I went to that meeting. I brought it to the attention of certain groups and certain people that go weigh in with your public comment. Like as part of those, I assume part of those 500 responses that Andy was just talking about. Mm-hmm. So, there's that. I when I'm out there, it's easy to bounce things off of me, and I'll sometimes play devil's advocate, if you will. And I'll listen to everything. I think everybody has a valid input. It's a lot of it's anecdotal, and you gotta, keep in mind that even I tell people my own personal beliefs are just that. They're anecdotal. They're based on what I saw that day. One day of fishing doesn't make the expert necessarily, but you'll hear that. Expert testimony.
No, it doesn't. But what you're saying, Tom, is that people can share information with you, but of course, if they want to share with the Department of Fisheries, they need to either complete the surveys or get, call the actual
office. Correct. Yeah, to actually weigh in and to get their viewpoints down on paper as well.
That's right. And another venue might be for folks to join the local fishing associations. We have a Panhandle chapter of Trout Unlimited. We've got the Pondre of Idaho Club that is very focused on fishing in the lake. And organizations like that often can offer information to fisheries that they listen to.
Mm-hmm. The subject of fisheries goes way beyond the people who are just fishing, too. There's an economic component, and without the specific numbers in front of us, the broad stroke terms of how this affects our local area as well as the state of Idaho economically.
Yeah, certainly fisheries have a huge economic input. To try to understand that, and we do account for that on some level in our management. So periodically we'll do a statewide economic survey. So that'll be a survey that goes out to anglers throughout the state and asks them to complete what's actually kind of an involved survey at estimating how many days did you go fishing, which water bodies did you fish, how much money did you spend on gas for your truck and your boat and fishing equipment, all those types of stuff. And we haven't done one of those for a few years. We're actually looking at doing another one here in the next couple. But for example, in the Panhandle, the last time we did one of those surveys I think was 2012, and to give you an idea, Lake Pondere itself generated an estimated roughly $13 million to the local economy. Our other big lakes like Priest and Coeur d'Alene are big contributors. Big rivers like the St. Joe, for example, are also big contributors. But we're talking millions and millions of dollars that are generated to the local economies from these fisheries. So it's a big deal.
And that's just the direct impact. It's not the indirect impact of someone like Julie moving here because of the fishing.
That's right.
So true. And that leads me to the question of how are our fisheries doing as compared to the country? It seems like we're really doing well.
Well, in my estimation, we are. I mean, I think we're very fortunate to have tremendous resources in Idaho relative to a lot of states. We have a lot of public land. We have a lot of waters that are still in really great shape. And it allows us an opportunity to manage for some really good fisheries. And I think a lot of folks are here and out enjoying the angling because of that. So,
yeah, I think what's neat about the Panhandle, not only are fisheries good, but it's the diversity. We've got a lot of opportunity that is all in one place. You can be a lot of different types of fish, a lot of different types of waters, a lot of different scenery to see while you're out there. It's kind of a neat combination of all the right things. So.
It is a unique combination. Tom?
We also had people should know this, or at least it helps drive the fishery. We have at least three state records that are on the books from this, just Lake Pend'Oreille itself. We had the... actually, in two world records, if I'm not mistaken, one still stands for Kamloops, and still also stands for bull trout. And so that draws a lot of people. And if you ask the guides that are out there, and if you ask the sporting goods shops, you know what this means to the greater good. It means everything to them to actually have that kind of a world class fishery. And people I'm seeing in the field too are coming a long way to come fish here, because things did turn around when the kokanee kind of came, made a comeback. Mm-hmm. And some of these fish are, you know, getting large again. And what we're seeing is, there's proof out there, because boats are out there and mm-hmm. people are fishing.
It seems like it's a huge job, a huge topic. And tell us a little bit of how you coordinate with some of the other entities interested. I'm thinking specifically here, the tribal management of some of the waters.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of folks that we coordinate with. In parts of the region, we do coordinate with tribes, especially in like the Kootenai drainage. We have three tribes here in the region we coordinate with, the Kootenai tribe, the Kalispell tribe, and the Coeur d'Alene tribe, different parts of the region. But we coordinate with a lot of other entities too. So you have federal agencies like the Forest Service, Fish and Wildlife Service, other state government entities that we coordinate with. There's a long list of them. So a lot of what we do actually is, yeah, trying to coordinate with these other programs and help them understand what our objectives are and work with them so that we can, yeah, work toward kind of some common goals.
And a question that I've had, and it will probably be addressed further when we talk about the three projects after the song break, but just a question about how are we doing with invasive species in Idaho? It seems like we're doing pretty well keeping most of them out, but I know it's an ongoing challenge. Let's talk about that for a moment.
Yeah, I guess I'll try to take that one on a little bit. So fish that are introduced and sometimes conflict with native species or other desirable fisheries are something that we deal with often, and it seems like more and more so all the time. So I think we're faring pretty well. We're trying hard to stay on top of those and understand, I guess, what the impacts of introduced fishes are, and how they might impede what we're trying to do and what we provide to anglers. But it's a challenge. Yeah, it's there's always new things coming up. And, of course, in Lake Pend'Oreille, sort of the hot topic, I guess, if you will, walleye, northern pike are the two big ones. Both very desirable species in their own right for some anglers and the challenges that they eat other fish, and balancing that with all the other things we're trying to provide in a lake like Lake Pend'Oreille can be tough.
There's also the threats from other introduced species that might impact habitat and then the fisheries. I'm thinking the zebra mussel here, particularly in milfoil and other invasive weeds.
Well, one of the things that you see on the roadsides now, or you see the boat checks, and I have expressed point to our Department of Ag to I wish we did it differently, in the sense that I wish all the known sources of those invasives were actually being cordoned off and boats checked and cleaned as they came out, rather than trying to catch them as they're casting this very broad net, if you will, trying to catch them on the highways, hoping that somebody actually stops. Yeah. First off.
Well, that does raise a question. Will they come after me if I don't stop? I'm always worried about it, but I haven't seen it happen.
If I'm sitting there, yes, but we have so many other places to be that it's right. Extremely difficult. And I know ISP has shared some of that duty, and some of the other LE agencies have also tried to tackle that, but they're not full-time, and there is no full-time mechanism for the pay for that. So the bigger issue is, yeah, is it going to happen? I mean, is something going to slip by? I think we are playing with a ticking time bomb that's actually going to, potentially, if we had these things show up here, then the eradication effort would be enormous. And perhaps, as you've seen in some other water bodies, not successful to this point. So we have to all take that into account, and we have to all be aware that, everything we're talking about here in terms of fisheries could change if certain species wind up here.
True. It's a tricky problem to solve because invasives can come from everywhere, states, other states, et cetera, and we know that. Question about the fisheries policy on invasive fish species. Is there a set policy that Idaho fisheries are against introduced non-natives or not at this time?
Well, it's not quite that simple. What we are against are people who are moving things around, and that's certainly illegal and has some pretty stiff penalties. So on a more agency basis, we very carefully evaluate if there are opportunities where we should be introducing a species to a body of water that hasn't been there. But anymore, that's pretty rare that we do that. It's not something that happens anywhere near as commonly as it would have historically because of some of the consequences.
Right. Well, back in the day, people would just bring their fish and put them in a lake, and that's really not okay.
That's right.
Yeah, that's right. I think one thing to add to that, sort of the stand, I guess, if you will, that when fish are illegally introduced, the point that the management plan has made in the past, and I think will in the future, is that we won't manage for those fish. So there's not going to be a positive response to an illegal introduction. Mostly for some very influential fish, and walleye being one of those. So when they're illegally introduced, whether they may be favored or not, it's not a line we're going to take to manage for that species. So.
All right.
We've had to actually, come to a change ourselves just philosophically in the department. I mean, you look back even before the days when I started, there was a time, for instance, brook trout, which was, I think, our first listed species that was introduced, was, in part because we helped do that. So, with our agency of one, that was back in the day, but, we're part of that. And if you look at Lake Pendere, the original, what I consider just three game fish that were here, mountain whitefish, bull trout, and cutthroat, which were in the system. Help me, guys, if I'm forgetting anything. But those three are now, we have over, I think, around 27 at my last count. So if you think about that, that's all within the last 120 years.
So. All right. So pretty difficult to maintain a completely native set of species in our big lakes.
Well, once established, then that becomes part of the chain that you're managing for. It's hard. You can't just extract all of a sudden 24 of the 27 species.
Yeah, right. In some cases, there's opportunities, but especially as systems get large and Pendere being on the extreme end of that scale. Yeah, once they're there, it's really tough to change that composition. So.
Well, let's take a short song break, and then we're going to come back and talk about some projects that fisheries are working on. A song, this one picked by Tom Whalen, is John Prine's. And that was That's the Way the World Goes Round with John Prine. Thank you, Tom Whalen, for suggesting that song. It was a good one for this morning. For those of you just joining us, this is 88.5 KRFY, listener-supported community radio for the Idaho Panhandle. And Phil Huff and I are joined this morning by Idaho Fisheries folks. And we have Andy Ducks from Coeur d'Alene, who's the regional manager. We've got Tom Whalen, an enforcement officer. And we have Ryan
Rob Ryan.
Thank you. Rob Ryan, not Ryan Rob.
It happens every day.
It's so tough when we have first names and last names.
Rob
there are first names. Rob Ryan. Yep. And we're coming back to talk about some particular projects that fisheries are working on. And I believe Rob is going to start and tell us more about the one that's happening up at Priest Lake. Rob, tell us about that.
Yeah. I'll give a little bit of background. So Andy spoke a little bit about wrapping up or nearly wrapping up our latest effort on our statewide fish management plan. And about 6 years ago, we were in this same position working on our six-year fish management plan. And we were hearing from anglers who had an interest in Priest Lake and the fishery there. And they had some interest in what other options might be available to manage that lake. So that we were doing a lot of work on Lake Pendere at the time. Kokanee fishing was pretty good and getting questions like, Can we do that on Priest Lake, or can we see some better cutthroat fishing on Priest Lake? And enough interest that we set sort of a direction for 6 years to do the best we could to investigate what opportunities we had biologically, to investigate what interest there was socially, and think about what, you know, what management might look like into the future for that lake. And so we spent a lot of time working on it, both investigating the fish and the fishery itself, trying to learn what was there and what that meant for the future. We spent a lot of time working with a stakeholder group to help us ask those questions and think about the social questions. And then ultimately had proposals, you know, here are the options. Here's what we think we can do. And we took that to the public in some survey work. And we got answers, but unfortunately, people can't, there isn't one common theme out there in terms of what people want. So opinions were pretty well divided and really left us sort of in the spot where we're at. Our proposal in this case would be no change for Priest Lake, which is okay. There's a lot of good opportunities there now, as well as some opportunities to change some things a little bit. And I guess that leads me to what I'm thinking about. But so Priest Lake is a lake trout fishery, has been for quite some time. I guess historically it was a kokanee fishery back in the 40s, 50s, 60s, and early 70s. But since that time, it's primarily been a lake trout fishery. And that's different, though, than Upper Priest Lake. So Upper Priest Lake's been managed for native species primarily for the majority of our management history, if you will, and still has a pretty good stronghold of things like cutthroat and bull trout. So that direction will continue. I guess we're putting out a few things and looking for some input from folks in our rules cycle. So we're proposing a couple new rules specifically for Upper Priest Lake to help us with our management direction that we've had for a long time. So there are lake trout in Upper Priest Lake, and we annually do some work to try to limit, the abundance of those fish up there. And we're looking for anglers' help. So I guess one of the proposals would be to allow anglers to catch as many lake trout in Upper Priest Lake as they'd like to. So it just puts the angler to work, helping us out in maintaining that management objective that was supported by many anglers in our process of our six-year plan. But there's some other rules up there that sort of relate to native species conservation or could, and no bait and barbless hooks are the ones that are currently in place. And we're proposing to do away with those as well. And not for the detriment of native fish, but to support the harvest of lake trout primarily. And we know that there's some good examples of other places where we maintain good, healthy populations of native fish and allow techniques like using bait and having barbed hooks. So we're comfortable with the outlook, you know, if we went to those rules or if those were supported by the Fish and Game Commission, that we would still be able to maintain those bull trout and cutthroat that we've got in Upper Priest Lake and maybe even benefit them by keeping the lake trout population further down.
So the lake trout population, just for clarity for folks in Priest Lake itself, is a fairly recent historical managed for that fishery. It's an introduced or non-native species.
It is an introduced species. It's actually been there since the 1920s, but it really didn't expand into a real robust population until probably beginning in the late 70s through the 80s. And then by the 90s, lake trout were the primary fish out there. They more or less took over. Bull trout are pretty much absent from Priest Lake now. Cutthroat are still relatively abundant. They're definitely there and in fishable numbers, but likely not as abundant as they were historically.
So is the goal or hope to reduce their numbers to some balance with the other native fish?
Well, not in Priest Lake. So in Priest Lake, the continued objective will be to maintain a lake trout fishery there. So that's been the management direction for a long time. And based on our recent work, that'll continue to be, assuming that the commission supports the current management plan, would be the direction that we go. So it's Upper Priest Lake, which is independent yet not. It's own water body, but they are connected to a thoroughfare, a channel of water that's about 2 miles long or so. I guess the downside to being connected is that you have a passageway for fish, and that's how lake trout got to the upper lake. So although we've managed for native fish there for a long time, and lake trout were not intentionally introduced to Upper Priest Lake, they have found their way up there. So. Mm.
Is there a barrier to keep the lake trout from Priest Lake and away from Upper Priest Lake, or not so?
Not so, yeah. Unfortunately, we haven't come up with a good way to keep them going. We know that there's some movement between the two lakes. It's not a mass migration on an annual basis, but enough that there are lake trout that remain in Upper Priest Lake. And that's why we're asking anglers to give us a hand, or where we're removing or hoping to remove limits up there, just to make it easier to kind of keep them at a lower level where native fish can do their thing as well.
Sure, it seems like a reasonable plan and one that anglers can help with, and hopefully you all will be able to get a handle on how it's working.
Yeah. I hope so. I think there's a good opportunity there, and again, this is based on, potential rules that are probably going to go before the commission here shortly, and hopefully will be something that they'll support.
It will be interesting to see how that works. So that's sort of what's happening with Priest Lake. Shall we move on? Phil, are you ready to move on?
No, I have one question about that. It seems like the Priest River below Priest Lake itself might have its own unique objectives. Does it have a separate plan? Or if not, how is it impacted by the work being done on the lake above it?
Well, the fish community in the river itself is a little bit different because it's moving water, I guess, to start. And in terms of the habitat it provides, it's also a little bit different. It's a bit warmer. I'll say there's not as much cold water refugia, I guess, for some of our cold water fishes. There is some discussion about how to make that colder, and not much new to talk about there. There's a bypass proposal out there to try to add cold water, but there's a lot going on there that... hasn't really developed yet, so I won't go into it too much. But yeah, so the fisheries are generally within our management plan are characterized by drainage. So the Priest River is part of the grander drainage plan, but it has its own objectives in that.
Right. So I guess the question is, what are the objectives for it or the impacts on it?
Sure. So I guess the main objective is to maintain some portion of the native fish community that's there. So it would be cutthroat. And it's also an important passageway for some of our fish from Lake Ponderay. So bull trout in particular use Priest River and its tributaries, specifically some of the streams that come into the Priest River as spawning and rearing streams. So that's one of the biggest things to highlight is that we're managing that as a corridor to these tributaries. They're important for these native fish that spawn and rear there and then feed other systems like Lake Ponderay.
And we'll hear more about that as time goes on in your study that has been keeping track of water temperatures and a concept plan for a siphon sort of bypass. But we'll hear more about that in months and years to come. Let's move on and talk about what's happening in Lake Kokolala.
Yeah, so we've got a number of these smaller lakes around the region, and we try to maintain a diverse array of opportunities in those lakes. And Kokolala is one of them that's sort of been on the back burner a little bit in that provides a lot of opportunity, but it needed to be checked in on to see, you know, what was going on, what kind of opportunity it is providing and how our management actions have influenced that or could be changed to make something better. And so we've been working on an angler survey there for about a little over 6 months now. It's our way of checking in, saying, okay, how are anglers using this water? What's fishing like? And how does that influence, you know, what management actions we've been taking or will take in the future? And it's been a real eye-opener, I think. Kokalal is probably one of our better little trout fisheries. So if folks are looking for a hot tip, here it is. Kokalal provides a pretty diverse trout fishery. We've got cutthroat that we stock in there and are harvestable. There's 6-fish trout limit on Kokalal Lake, and that can include cutthroat in that case, which is somewhat unique to the region. A lot of our cutthroat fisheries are catch and release only. It also provides rainbow trout fishing, brown trout fishing, brook trout fishing. So it's got a great cold water component, and it's got a two-tiered fishery. So we've got a pretty good warm water fishery as well. It offers largemouth, smallmouth bass, black crappie, channel catfish, just an array. So it's a good opportunity. One of the things we're learning, it's fairly lightly used. You know, there are fishermen out there, anglers are trying it, but compared to a lot of waters, well, maybe not so much.
Not now that the secret's out
there. I know. Everybody's going to be out there. So
thanks a lot there.
I think it highlights one of the things we do, and that's keeping tabs on fisheries, not only the biological component, but the social component, how anglers are using it and what's important to anglers and what that means in terms of management. Coincidentally, we're doing the same thing on Spirit Lake right now. So those Spirit Lake anglers could get that same type of information down the road here when we wrap up these surveys. We'll be able to share some of that with folks about what's out there, what anglers are trying for, how good fishing is, and what we might change. And I guess in Kokalala's case, one of the things that we've learned is about how we've been stocking rainbow trout. So we use different types of rainbow trout, either little guys that are just a couple months old or bigger fish that are older, but they're already at the size that anglers like to catch them. What we're finding in Kokalal is that when we stock the little guys and expect them to grow to a bigger size, they don't make it very well. So for rainbow trout specifically anyway. And so we've had an opportunity actually to increase the amount of these catchable size fish that we can stock around the region. And Kokalala is going to be one of the recipients of those fish. So for those rainbow trout anglers, again, there's going to be a new opportunity there. Some additional larger rainbow trout going to be stocked in that lake and some good opportunity, I think, that'll come from that. So
okay. And do those rainbow trout reproduce, or are they ones that aren't fish that reproduce?
Yeah, so they don't reproduce. Almost all of the rainbow trout that we stock throughout the state of Idaho are now triploid rainbow trout. Just means that they've gone through a process, and when that egg was developing, that they were shocked and they kept an extra set of chromosomes. In this case, just some high pressure changes how that egg develops, and that triploid fish, that's what we call them, triploids, they're a non-reproducing fish. So.
And why is that good for Idaho?
Yeah, it's a good thing that we've talked a little bit earlier about introduced fish and their impacts on places where they weren't from, and that's a tool that we use to limit the impacts of rainbow trout on other fish where they may not be a native fish, or they may influence other fish populations in ways we don't want them to. So it's just, it's a good tool to...
So you can control their numbers just by not reintroducing water.
Correct.
We're changing the amount you reintroduce.
Correct. Yep. Control numbers and lower that impact on other fish in the fisheries or drainages.
I have to say Lake Kokalala is an interesting lake. We can all see it as we drive up and down Highway 95, and such a number of fish species. You wouldn't really expect catfish to be living in the same lake that cutthroats are living in, would we? But yet there they are, coexisting.
Right. Yep. Yep. Yeah. And I forgot one. It's actually probably one of the region's most popular perch fisheries for a winter ice fishery too. So.
Yeah.
That's right. And just around the corner from Kokalala is Round Lake. And I happened to be there walking my puppy one day. And there were, it was you all, fisheries, delivering the year's rainbow trout. And it was a big truck full. And it was big trout, too. So you must have a similar goal for Round Lake.
Yeah, Round Lake. Yep, Round Lake's one of the lowland lakes. That's what we call our smaller regional lakes that are lower in elevation. And Many of those receive catchable size rainbow trout that provide good opportunities, especially in the spring and early summer, and to some degree in the fall as well when water temperatures are cooler.
Sure. I suppose they get caught and then need to be stocked again the next year.
Yep. That's the goal.
Yeah.
Yep.
Very good. Well, we have a bit of time left, and we can touch on Lake Pendere if anyone would like to tackle that great big lake.
Well, yeah, I guess with the little time we have, I guess just a couple quick updates I thought would be important for folks. We've had a lot of questions this year about the kokanee fishery, and unfortunately, kokanee fishing hasn't been particularly good this year. We've had a lot of anglers throughout the season who have, I think, struggled to catch fish, or if they've caught fish, they've often been kind of on the small side, and so that's prompted questions about, well, how are kokanee doing? Are they actually struggling, and that's why we're not catching them? Well, in fact, we did our survey late this summer, and kokanee abundance is still actually tremendously good. In fact, we're probably at the highest densities we've been at since the early 90s. The trick is we have a lot of kokanee out there right now, and their size is small, basically because growth rates are reduced for kokanee when there are lots of them. So simply put, there aren't enough groceries to go around, so the fish don't have as much to eat. They don't get as big. And so we have really high densities of kokanee out there, but the adult fish, the fish that are going to start spawning here in the next few weeks, many of those fish are only 8 or 9 inches long, or sometimes even a little smaller. Mm. And so for much of the season, they've been small enough that they just haven't been particularly vulnerable to angling. And so that's not ideal. We certainly wish kokanee were a little bit bigger this year so we could provide better kokanee fishing opportunity. The good news is for folks who are interested in the fish that feed on kokanee, there have been plenty of them out there. So, for instance, rainbow trout and other things that eat kokanee, conditions are incredible right now. We've seen rainbow trout growth rates increase again this year. So that trend is continuing, increasing trophy potential for that population and other fish populations that feed on kokanee. But anyway, just wanted to let folks know that. And also that we are going to have plenty of kokanee that are spawning this year. And so the good news there is that those densities should remain high if everything continues to go well. And hopefully as we kind of, kokanee tend to be known for this, where they go through these cycles. And if you hit really high densities, size can get small, and that can have a negative effect on fishing. But they tend to kind of, you know, bounce around, and there'll be other years where size improves. And hopefully we'll be back to that before too much longer.
That's right, and maybe a nice size for the bull trout to be munching on, and raises a question for me, and I think about this often and just wonder, do fisheries think there might ever be a time when we'll fish for bull trout again, or is that so far down the road that we shouldn't expect it?
Yeah, well, I guess I'd start by saying go fish for bull trout now. It's totally legal to go catch bull trout as long as you're releasing them.
Yes.
But the other piece, and I think part you're trying to get at, is will we ever be able to have some kind of harvest fishery for bull trout again in Lake Pendere? And our hope is yes. Because they're listed as threatened and it's part of the Endangered Species Act, Fish and Game actually doesn't manage bull trout directly. They're managed by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service because of that ESA listing. But we're actively working with the Fish and Wildlife Service, and hopeful that in the not too distant future we can work with them to have a limited harvest opportunity on Pendere because the population here is doing so well, unlike some other places. And Tom, you may have something to add to that.
But. Well, you know, we've come very close to actually opening it up, and we had just a few setbacks, as you know, some of the rain on snow events that affected the upper pack, Lightning Creek, and just blown those systems out. Also, take with it that H class. So that we were close, I think, a few years ago to trying to figure out how to do either a permit system or some way that we haven't really talked about a way to actually go about, you know, harvesting bulls. But we keep getting closer and closer, and our population density seems to be quite good. I mean, you can go out any given day, even during the spawn when they're up in the tributaries, and people were catching them by some numbers out in the lake, which was sort of surprising this year. But, you know, we are seeing, I think, again, anecdotally, I'll use that word, from my perspective, we're seeing some pretty good numbers out there, and people are, you know, getting into them. So I do see down the road that actually we would probably have a fishery, and we kind of keep getting closer and closer to it, as long as we don't have setbacks of weather and these blowout situations that are knocking us back. I think we could probably get there. And ultimately, as Andy said, that is our goal, is to get back to, you know, harvestable population.
Good. Well, on that note, we're going to come to a close. Phil, any last comments? And I'll ask for the same from our three folks from fisheries.
No, I want to thank you all for coming in today. It's always a pleasure to be talking fish with the fisheries folks. And Tom, we're going to have you back in before you retire and hear some good anecdotal stories.
I just want to play some tunes, Phil.
All right. Well, we'll have
we
both.
Can do that too.
Andy, any last comments before we finish up? Contact info, maybe even.
Yeah, you bet. Feel free, anyone that has questions, to contact any of us at the Idaho Fish and Game Regional Office in Coeur d'Alene. We're always happy to talk fish and fishing. And I just encourage everybody to get out there and enjoy the beautiful fall weather we're having and some of the best fishing of the year right now. So there's a lot of good opportunities yet to be had.
That's right. And Rob, any last comments from you?
Well, thanks for letting us share a little bit about what we do. I'm always excited to talk about fishing. And like Andy said, folks are out there and have an interest in getting more information or just sharing their perspectives. Always interested in hearing that.
Thank you. And finally, our enforcement and education guy, Tom, any last comments?
I look forward to seeing you all in the field.
Sounds good. We'll see you out there. Well, we're going to take a song break about fishing, and this will be a favorite from these guys. They've asked for it before, and we're going to hear it again. It's the Whiz Pops with an original song that was, I believe, created for fish. Tell us about it, Tom. Where did this song come from?
So the band, the Whiz Pops, are from Missoula, Montana, and they're mostly science teachers, Forest Service people, and they're actually also joined by part of the Little Smokies band is playing on this as well, which was a band that won Telluride a few years back, if anybody's familiar with that. And it is just a song that actually I had a request a few years ago, and people like Reg from TU helped find the band, and then we got them to actually pen it up based on a video that we had done previously in-house for all the science aspect to it. And we actually have a great music video. So if you go to TakeNoBull.org. Make sure you put all those words together, otherwise you wind up at a different website.
Careful. Be careful.
Yeah, be careful where you go.
All right. Well, thank you all. And good here advice. We are with the